We have a maniacal focus on being efficient, but also driving down our costs so we can accelerate the rate of residential adoption in the United States. Like, that is our mission. We are going to continue to do that, but we need to do it as an industry, all right? And we need to weed out the bad actors.
This is the Solar Disruption Theory.
Welcome back to the Solar Disruption Theory podcast. We are here finally for season 5. My name is Chad Towner. I am your host. And with me is the CEO of Freedom Forever, Brett Bushy. Brett, season 5. You've been doing this for 5 seasons. How you doing? How does it feel to finally be back here? A lot has happened since our last podcast.
I can't even remember the last time we did a podcast. And, this has been 9 years in solar, and it feels like every year is like a dog year. It's like 7 years, like so much stuff happens. I was briefly describing to somebody the other day, you know, what had happened. It seemed like I was describing what had happened in 2023, and it was just what happened in the last week in solar.
I know there's so much going on. There's so much to get into. I want to try and go as high level as we can to start at least. So if like, you know, 2020 was the year of COVID. 2021 was supply chain disruption. 2022 was trying to find solar modules and interest rates going up. What is 2023? What is the highlight of 2023? What, if you could describe the year 2023 in as few words as possible, what would that be?
I'd say it was very disruptive. So I would also say that from an installation perspective, it's the year of consolidation. And there's been this conversation around, will long tail win or will the large installers win, that have been going on for like the decade, even prior to me getting involved in 2015. And I just think this year proves when there is chaos, it is better to be with the larger stable companies. And I think you're going to see the larger companies get a lot bigger in 2024 because of it. And we are just seeing essentially a winnowing of the small installers that really became vogue in 2018, 19, 20, 21, and even 22. And those people are just going away in droves. And if you're not taking this seriously, if you're not don't have the right amount of capital, and you're not looking at this through a lens of profitability and cash flow, you're going to fail. And it is not easy to operate in the economic environment in residential solar in 2023.
Yeah, you used the word chaos. That was actually the word that I was thinking of too. If you could sum 2023 into one word, I would probably use the word chaos, at least as it applies to the entire industry. So let's break this down. The beginning of 2023, I think the first notable change was interest rates just started climbing at a rapid rate. What was the effect of the increase of interest rates, and why did interest rates go up so fast? A lot of sales reps think that like these finance companies are just pocketing all this money. What actually happened?
Yes, and it started in the last quarter, last half of 2022. But a lot of people don't realize that other than the late 1970s and the 1980s, interest rates have never been higher. That was the only time they were higher than today. But the reality is that even back then, it took several years for them to go up. The sheer velocity of how quickly they went up was devastating to all the finance companies, because essentially most finance companies are securitizing and they're taking the individual loans and they are rolling them up into a tranche and they're selling them in securitizations. But you really can only do that after you get PTO in most cases.
Yeah.
So a lot of the times, because of the inefficiency of solar, because of the inefficiency of a lot of the solar installation companies, it can take anywhere from, you know, 3 months to 18 months to go from sale to PTO. So when you're selling a 199 with a high dealer fee, and all of a sudden in that 3 month period, the interest rates go up significantly, that means the finance company could theoretically be selling that at a loss when they go to securitize that. And that happened a lot. And I think 2023 was a very, very rough year from every single finance company, whether it's loans or, you know, it's TPO product, which is PPAs and leases. And furthermore, on this subject, like a lot of people are like looking at these dealer fees and they think these finance companies are making a ton of money. I want to debunk that myth. That is not the case. It makes me so upset when people point the finger at finance companies. So the reality is whether you're selling a 199 when interest rates were really, really low, or you're selling a 499 today, all right, you're getting a 499 solar loan, but your mortgage cost you 7 or 8%.
Yeah.
So why is the money cheaper for a solar loan than it is a mortgage? The answer is no. What you're doing is you're buying down that interest rate through dealer fees. And because the way that it works, you can actually get a offset off those dealer fees, which you can argue whether that's fair or not, or whether the ITC was intended to do that. But the reality is that's how it works. And so like this misconception, and if you say that there's a ton of money to be made by the finance companies because of dealer fees, that's just an uneducated, wrong statement.
Yeah, I remember in earlier this year, it was like February of this year, interest rates had gone up, dealer fees had skyrocketed already. Everyone thought that finance companies were pocketing the difference or making all this money. But what you're saying is, no, they, because of the lag from the time a project gets sold to the time they can actually go out and sell that project, if it's a loan, to investors, the interest rates that they're having to sell it at, when the rep initially sold the project to the customer, it was sold at a much lower interest rate or even dealer fee at the time. And now they're trying to sell it out on the open market to an investor, and interest rates are just higher. So why would an investor buy a lower interest rate project? So the finance company has to eat that cost. Is that correct?
That is correct. And it can be a few thousand dollars. It was not, it can be.
Yeah.
It was a few thousand dollars a project. And when you multiply that on a $400 million securitization, it's serious money. And yeah, it was a rough year. And so they're obviously, the finance companies are out to make a profit, but they did not make a profit in 2023. It was a very, very rough year for all of them.
Then what happened as a result of that is we started to see in like March, April, May, June, we started to see a lot of these finance companies, they're losing money and they're not making profit on the volume that they are trying to securitize. And so to kind of not make up for it, but they've got to start becoming a lot more efficient, and they're watching their dollars go out the door and trying to hold on to as much cash as possible. And so we started to see clawbacks, right? And you told me in February, I remember that I was on a call, and we had to start kind of instituting these clawbacks, as I think everybody did. And the terminology you used back then was, you said, this is going to be a reckoning. Like that was, you used to always talk about a consolidation event where, you know, companies were going to have to consolidate and join a bigger company, like we've seen with Freedom. A lot of smaller companies have failed and joined Freedom. That's a consolidation. But you used the word reckoning, and you said that you estimated the majority of small to medium-sized sales companies were going to fail. And that was back in February. And, you know, a lot of people thought, well, hey, that kind of sounds crazy. Since then, we've seen clawbacks, and a ton of companies have failed since then or have gone under. Walk us through what has happened in the last 9 months since you first kind of foresaw the clawbacks happening.
Yeah, so it's hard to get any data on what percentage exactly of the solar residential installation companies have failed in 23. But I am very confident in saying it's a majority, more than 50%. Whether it's 52% or 72%, I do not know. But the reckoning has already happened. And I also think that the next 3 months, you're going to see significant failures. And you're starting to see it not just on small to medium size, but also larger. Like in the last couple of weeks, we have had two of the top 20 residential installers become insolvent. And that makes a lot of people nervous and scary for everyone, but it absolutely needs to happen. So it's not surprising, But I think a lot of people were very, very slow to react to the clawbacks. And why the clawbacks happen is because a lot of people just weren't performing in a timely fashion. So the finance companies had a lot of rights to do this. And from an operational standpoint, it for a lot of companies, it was way worse than just the clawbacks. They had projects canceled. They were taking so long to get projects from sold to install that the finance companies were canceling the loan. So therefore, you can be $10,000 deep in a project, and because you didn't get it installed in a timely fashion, the loan was canceled, then the customer has to literally go back and sign new loan documents, but the new loan documents are going to be at a significantly higher interest rate because the finance companies were looking to get out of those bad loans. And the reality is that we have a responsibility to get things done in a timely fashion. That did not happen at Freedom because of our operational excellence, but I know that created a reckoning that I wasn't even thinking about in February. So it has happened quickly. It has been swift. And I think it's a good thing, though, because the opposite happened in 2020 and 2021 because interest rates were so low, money cost literally nothing. So giving money out pre-install was really easy for these finance companies and didn't have a significant cost. Well, when interest rates go up, all of a sudden that does become a significant cost. So what did they do? They started to lower or eliminate pre-install payments, and they tried to pay slower, and they tried to move the payment terms all the way back to install or even PTO. And you can understand why they did that. And that's what happens when the market gets tight, because in the first and second quarter of 23, then you started seeing regional banks fail.
Yeah.
And there was just an overall nervousness that everyone had, including myself. And no one is immune to this. This has been one of the more difficult years from an operational standpoint. And even though we've had our best year from an EBITDA standpoint or from a profitability standpoint, that doesn't translate necessarily into positive cash flow because the amount of capital that has been constricted in the residential solar market.
You mentioned regional banks failing. I totally forgot amidst all the chaos of 2023. Like Silicon Valley Bank, that seems like it was a lifetime ago. I mean, that was just this summer.
Well, I don't know where your head's at. It wasn't Silicon, it was Silicon. All right. So Silicon Valley Bank. But yeah, and I mean, that was crazy. And they had money from some of our finance partners. All right. Like a true story is we didn't get paid when that failure happened on Friday because one of our finance partners, or I think two of our finance partners, had exposure.
Yeah.
And that was a very, very scary time. And I remember on a Sunday sitting with my family hearing that the FDIC bailed them out. And I was happy relieved about that.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of people are against bailouts, but people do not understand this systemic risk of failure if you continue to allow banks fail. Like, we couldn't allow it to happen. And I'm really happy with the Federal Reserve and our own government in terms of how they've acted around these types of things. I was really proud of what happened and how our government acted swiftly in 2007 and 8 in the housing crisis, because people do not understand the whole United States government was at risk when that happened. And the Federal Reserve has a lot of incredible tools that they were able to utilize then, and they did it. And all of a sudden, like, we forgot about it because they did their job.
Right.
That's what a good government does. And I'm not, you know, saying that I'm a Biden fan or a Trump fan or anything like that. But the government stepped up and did their job. And the Federal Reserve has so many tools in their toolbox that they didn't have in the 20s and the 30s and the 40s, which caused the Great Depression. But they did a magnificent job. And the fact that we're forgetting to talk about this in a year of chaos, that was probably the scariest 2 weeks of 23 for me.
Yeah, no, I remember that well. So, all right, so fast forward, we go through the summer. And this fall, we're just seeing, like you said, large installers. I mean, from a sales standpoint, I've never seen more people flocking to, at least to Freedom, than I've ever seen. It seems like Freedom is the place that everyone is feels like is the safe place to sell. Luckily, you know, it seems like we've kind of been preparing for this and building this machine to be able to handle this type of volume. But as you'd mentioned, you know, even Freedom, we're not immune to some of these existing challenges. So for the rest of the sales world, especially those who are in the sales industry right now that are selling, what do you think sets Freedom apart other than the fact that we're the safe company to sell with versus everyone else?
Number one, we have a maniacal focus on operations. Like, and that doesn't mean we're going to be perfect in every single market, but like that is all we do. We have one singular focus and that's it. We're not focused on sales. We're not focused on selling equipment. We're not focused on finance. We do one thing and we strive to be the best at it. That's issue number one. Issue number two is that we have spent so many years building a platform with our own tech, which we call Lightspeed, and then our mobile version of Lightspeed, which is called Volt. That's incredible. And that gives us a competitive advantage. And it's not like we have a patent on the software. It's just the fact that it's not built on Salesforce. It's constantly evolving and it's constantly getting better. And the fact that you have transparency and visibility on every single project from the commission down to the timelines. Like one of the issues that we have in our industry is like transparency to the customers. We talked a lot about it. As soon as you sign with Freedom, the customer can see the timelines that we have to hit in that particular market. And it's based on an algorithm of that particular AHJ, that particular HOA. And, you know, we're on the clock as soon as we sell that project. And a customer will know, will be right in their face if we get behind. And that's good. That creates accountability, but most importantly, it creates transparency. Even when we make mistakes is when I think we shine, because you can see the actual mistake. And so many companies have the opposite. Like I talk about it all the time. As a company and as a human being, like I want to operate in light. My favorite scripture is Matthew 5:14, where you are a light of this world. We have to be the light in this industry. Everybody wants to operate in darkness. A lot of people just go in and they have this mentality is that, hey, sell two jobs, you're gonna get one installed. Don't worry about it after you sell. And you have no visibility into the project. You actually don't even know why it didn't get built. And that to me is craziness, all right? There needs to be transparency. You need to be able to communicate with that customer when you can't build a project or there's an additional expense. Every project can be built. There just might be an expense that it might not make a lot of sense. So when you're going in and a customer has an expectation that they're going to save $40 off of their bill and we realize we need a new roof, you add on the roof and all of a sudden it's going to go from a $40 cost savings on a monthly basis to a $50 increase. That may cause that customer to say no, but that customer needs to be explained to that customer why they need a new roof. And that is a very subjective discussion. And we celebrate those discussions. You have to have those difficult discussions. Yep. And that's what makes us different.
Yeah. So, and switching gears, another thing that I think we have seen, talking about 21 and 22, that and COVID and everything that caused this massive shortage of panels, we're kind of on the back end of that. And now we're seeing kind of the opposite take effect. Have panels finally come down? What's the state of the module market today?
It's the antithesis of the module shortage. There is a module oversupply and equipment costs continue to come down, which is incredible. We actually had a panel adder for a year and a half ago that went away several months ago. And we're starting to see now other adders come down, and we're also starting to see reductions in baselines because our costs are starting to come down. Our equipment costs have never been lower than today.
So panel adders have gone away. Module costs have finally come back down. And although interest rates haven't come back down, do you foresee a similar thing where a lot of COVID has had a lot of an impact on the last couple of years, but I think that was the large force driving interest rates up with inflation? And then do you see that coming down in the next 12 months as well?
Yes, I do. And when you look at all the economic data, you know, if you've ever been in my office, I've got Bloomberg up. So I'm looking at all the data. Everybody has access to the same data that I have. It's not a question on whether they're coming down or not. It's when. So, and I think you could start seeing reductions as soon as March, Q1. And I think that is going to be a boon for our industry because this year our industry, and again, it's really difficult to get exact data on our industry because the only thing you can really look at is PTOs in some markets as well as permits in other markets. So you're always trying to triangulate the data. But based on what industry analysts have said, based on what I believe the residential solar market will be down 25% in 2023. And I want everybody to like absorb the gravity of that. Like it's never went down. And we have been growing as an industry by 30%. So that is one of the biggest things around the disruption. We can talk about banks and finance and all those types of things, but to see the actual demand go from 30% to the positive to 25% of the negative, I've never seen that happen in less than a year in any of the industries I've been involved with. The sheer velocity of how that happened. Like we were projecting a number. We are growing at a significant number in 2023, but we were projecting a much higher number when we did our projections in Q3 and Q4 of 22. So it's affected everyone, yeah. But I'm just thankful that we've been able to grow in such a difficult market. And it's also enabled us to take more market share because I never dreamed in a scenario where we would see in a market contracting by 25%.
Right. So if interest rates coming back down is more a matter of when than a question of if, what do you see happening when that happens?
Yeah, you are going to see the residential market place increase. So, and it just matters how much it does come down. So if you're modeling a, you know, four small increases throughout the year, it's still 2024 still could be a rough year. So right now, I gave a projection when I was on with Philip Shin, and you know, I do a webinar with him every quarter. I was projecting down, I think 5 to 10% in 2024, based on what happens with interest rates. But I was more pessimistic even a couple of months ago around interest rates. Now that I'm more positive on interest rates, I think there's a chance that we could have positive growth in 24. But if interest rates start to come down quicker, then you could see 5, 10, 15, 20% increase. It's just a matter of when. If it happens at the tail end of the year, it really is not going to have an impact on installs. It really needs to happen in Q1 and Q2 to really drive 2024 installation growth.
Okay, so I think we're kind of caught up to at least today. It's December of 2023. And we could spend hours and hours and days talking about everything that's happened so far, but we've hit the big points. So the thing that is hot right now that everybody seems to be talking about is the TPO market. It's like a couple months ago, there was maybe two or three players in the country. And now it seems like there's a lot more and potentially more to come. And in a world where interest rates are as high as they are and financing is as difficult as it is to turn a profit, what is going on with the TPO market? There's all these new entrants and they're getting extremely aggressive in the marketplace. What is happening with the TPO market?
So there's two things. Number one, the Inflation Reduction Act. The Inflation Reduction Act has some economic benefits for third-party owned systems that are not beneficial for purchases. So we were really excited about the Inflation Reduction Act because we were seeing the ITC tax credit going down to zero before it happened. Then it went up to 30%. But what was so shocking is the additional tax credits that were in there for TPO. And that has to do with energy communities. It has to do with domestic content that is not even factored in, which is another 10%. You also have 10% for low income. So you have on a project, if it's in a low income energy community and you're using domestic content, you can get a 60% tax credit. Now, if you use an inverter that's done here in the US or SolarEdge or Enphase, you can get up to 63. There's a maximum tax credit on a TPO project of 72%. So that is number one, is that all of those things are being monetized. Well, I actually take that back. LMI is being monetized, which is low income. So is energy communities, but there's still a lot of information that needs to come out on domestic content. So we'll probably see an additional bump of tax credits, which will raise the value of PPAs and leases even more in 2024. So that is the main thing. But what has happened in the last 12 to 18 months is monetization of VPP. So that's another new thing that people are talking about, virtual power plants. To simply explain that is that if you have solar on your house, you have a virtual power plant. And if you can figure out a way to own systems on other people's house, i.e. third-party owned systems, and you can aggregate a lot of that, that creates tremendous value to the utility. Because as more solar comes onto the grid, what happens? It creates an imbalance where there's more value for energy in the day because there's an abundance of it because solar works in the day, but not enough at night. So if you can figure out a way to store that and then send it back through the grid to the utilities, that would be very valuable to the utilities because they constantly have to then do what? Peaker plants. Those are very, very expensive. And you're talking about fossil fuel emissions. So if you can avoid those peaker plants and get the monetization and get money from your VPP, that has tremendous value. So now everyone is trying to figure out, how do I financially model a virtual power plant over the next 25 years on a PPA release? So we don't know what the actual number will be, but we know it will be something. And if you if you model it one way, that will create more value to the investor buying the PPA and the lease. So therefore, they're willing to pay more, which is why you see EPCs going up. So that's something that is brand new. And I'm a finance guy through and through. So trying to model it out over the next 25 years is very difficult, but it has the potential to be incredibly valuable.
So I want to break that down because you just covered a lot of ground there. So for a virtual power plant, the potential, the way that a PPA or a lease used to get priced is basically like, all right, what's your price per kilowatt hour times the 25 years at a 2.9% or 3.5% escalator? And like, that's kind of the value. There's this net present value that's determined in the home. And, you know, for the past several years, the value of each of these TPO contracts varied, you know, 10 to 20 or sometimes 30 cents from one PPA company to another.
And then you're selling the tax credit, all right, to a third-party investor who can assume the tax credit, and in addition to accelerated depreciation, is called those MACRs. All right, so there's a lot that go in behind the scenes, but it was fairly simple back then, and now you have all these other components to it.
So now this other potential revenue source down the road has been unlocked, or at least theoretically has been unlocked, where the PPA company or the TPO company could combine a bunch of homes that have solar plus batteries and sell that power back to the grid when the utility needs it and charge a premium to the utility. And that has almost created almost a compounding value to these contracts. And, you know, this is why... Is that the reason why we're seeing such broad disparities between one company's EPC pricing versus another? I mean, and then all these new companies seem to be coming onto the market, and it seems like there's even more that are coming that, you know, we're probably not going to mention, but it seems like there's a lot more that is on the horizon.
Yes, and some people just have a more conservative view, and some have more of an aggressive view, and it doesn't mean that either one is wrong. And I know, you know, most of our listeners are people in sales, and they're like, whoever's paying me the most is the one I love the most. But it doesn't mean that that is the right decision, because we need these companies to be successful. And just because another company is going to take a more conservative view doesn't mean they're wrong. So, and from a financial standpoint, yes, we like the fact that it's more competitive and willing, people are willing to pay more because that makes the economics better for all of us. So I do get and understand that. But, you know, I'm proud of the companies we work with and I'm proud of the other companies that are coming into the industry. And competition is not a bad thing, especially in an industry that is growing so much. And I also think you could see a resurgence of loans if interest rates come down. So that will also help the loan proposition if that happens. So when you start modeling out what is our TPO percentage and what is our loan percentage, it's hard to really predict when you get out to 2025 and beyond. But the harsh reality is that we had a super, super majority. We were loan in early of 2022, and now we're shifting to a super majority as TPO. And that is a trend that we're seeing throughout the industry, and I do not expect that to change in 24. And as domestic content comes in, which is additional economic benefits, I think you could see even a higher percentage in 24 on TPO, and then we'll see what happens with interest rates from there.
Yeah, and an afterthought is just battery pricing. Battery pricing has finally started to come down in a big way. And we, you know, they've been very, very high for a really long time and there's really no margin in batteries, but that's, you know, just something I've already skipped over because of all the other stuff going on.
Yeah, and that is the key because, you know, what is the flaw in residential solar? What is the flaw in solar? It doesn't work at night.
Yep.
So ultimately, that's okay when only 3% of the market is solar. But when you get to a state that gets to 12% like California or 40% for Hawaii, that becomes a huge problem. And it creates this huge imbalance on the grid. We hear about the duck curve. It is a major problem. How you fix that is storage. The problem with storage has been the cost of storage. It has not been cost effective. So what we've seen in California is we've seen a shift towards the value of solar and they valued it a lot more in the net billing tariffs, which is why on almost every project in California, you almost should have a battery on it. But we didn't expect is for the cost of the batteries to go down. So we talk about so many headwinds in 23, but one of the tailwinds we now have is battery costs are down 50%. From where it's peaked, and we didn't have enough. We were paying double and we couldn't get them. We were almost having to bid each other up to get a Powerwall. Like it was crazy how much it's turned around in a couple of years.
I know. And amidst all this chaos, I want to get into like Freedom specifically now. Amidst all this chaos, we've got companies that are really struggling to survive and stay in business. A lot of companies that are going out of business can't keep up with all this craziness. Freedom Forever has opened up like 4 states in the last couple of weeks. When everyone else is just trying to survive, what the heck is going on? Why are we opening up 4 more states, all these new markets? What's the thought process behind that?
That is a byproduct of just equipment costs coming down. Like we talked about with interest rates being high, and we talked about this 6 months ago. Interest rates being high, equipment costs being where they were, like we shouldn't be opening any more states until we see a light at the end of the tunnel on interest rates. We now see that. Equipment costs have come down significantly. So the markets that we went into, we recently just announced Missouri, Oklahoma, and Washington. These are markets that are in that 12 to 13, 14 cents a kilowatt hour rate. It's hard to create cost savings. And we want to be able to go into a market and at least do a bill swap, but hopefully save the customer 5 to 10% on their money. That it gets really difficult to do when you get at 13 cent power or lower. I am very optimistic with interest rates coming down, and I think we're going to be able to save customers a lot of money. I don't want to say a lot of money, but save them money in places like Washington. Washington's probably the lowest. We're talking about an average of around 11 cents a kilowatt hour in Washington. Oklahoma's a little bit higher. Missouri's a little bit higher. But that to us is the key. And we want to be in all 50 states. The other thing that we're doing this is we're going to have a Freedom truck is going to be rolling up to do the site audit. A Freedom Truck is going to be rolling up to do the solar installation. And we're proud of the fact that we have 1,500 vehicles on the road. If we have a problem with one of our systems, we have a service tech usually within 30 minutes, 9 to 5, Monday through Friday. And that's something that no one in the country can say. And that's in 35 states, but we don't want to stop at 35 states. We got to open up the last 15. The last 15 are 12 cent, 11 cent, 10 cent, and even 9 cent power. That's going to be difficult, but we have a pathway to do it, especially with equipment costs being as low as they are today.
Yeah, and one other area that we haven't mentioned yet is Puerto Rico. That area, that territory, it's not a state, but it's a territory, is a very unique market. We launched that. What are the dynamics in Puerto Rico? Why is that so exciting?
What's so exciting is there's like 2.4 million people in the metro San Juan market. There's over 3 million people that live in Puerto Rico. It's a U.S. territory. But, you know, to us, I think like when we go in and do something, we are very, very different. That is a market that has been kind of a status quo for like 9 years. The cost of power is very, very high. And I want to be crystal clear. People sell too high in Puerto Rico, all right, yeah. Because they can. And it's almost like everybody's selling around the same price and no one wants to sacrifice margin. It's just wrong. Like, we can be selling to customers in Puerto Rico and saving them a lot of money. Just because you can save people money doesn't mean it's right. If you're selling a product that has a commodity aspect to it, which it does, right? Every module is very, very similar. I hate to break that to everyone. Not every inverter is the same. That's the brains of the system. But we do have a commodity aspect to our product. And when we all just lock arms and try to charge the same price and make an incredible margin that's too high, that's wrong. We are going to go in and disrupt Puerto Rico, and we're going to sell a dollar a watt cheaper than everyone else. And, you know, people either need to run a real business, be more efficient, match our pricing, or go somewhere else. Go to the Virgin Islands, go somewhere else that we're not in, and we'll come and we'll chase you down there.
It's a good lead into my next topic. And this is the thing. It's funny, like, it seems like a lot of people are starting to talk about this now. You know, you've been talking about this for years, and this is compliance. This is compliance and regulation. In fact, we spent a lot of time last year with several of the people we interviewed talking about compliance, giving the customer a fair price. I mean, you built the entire shared revenue model to drive compliance sales behavior and to make sure that we do not have reps who are gouging customers because of, you know, the flexibility on the pricing and the lack of transparency on the pricing for customers. But it seems like a lot of other people are now finally starting to like talk about it, which is great. But like in the state of Nevada, which, you know, we're here in our HQ in Las Vegas right now, they've changed the entire way that solar has to be sold in the state of Nevada. You can't be a 1099 independent contractor selling solar in Nevada. And we could debate whether or not that's actually going to be effective at fixing the compliance issue. But there's this Nevada thing, and then California, they did the net billing tariff, or NEM 3 now. And I think something else just passed today or is coming down the pike in California that is further punitive towards solar customers. There's all this legislation and all these kind of things that seem to be tightening. Arizona looks to be reducing their export rates by an even more aggressive accelerated rate than it was originally slated to do. With all these changes, why is it now that finally people are starting to actually like talk about compliance and customer satisfaction?
I don't know why it's taken this long. We just had a negative article about our industry. I think the title was that Solar Bros was in it. And it just reflected on our industry. And a lot of people called it a hit piece on our industry, but it really wasn't. It was very accurate.
It's true, right?
Right, yeah, it was true. Yes. And I'm glad. And again, I'm going to get back to that, you know, Matthew 5:14. We need to be a light in this industry. All right. And we need to shine a light on this. And I know there's people that are on this, going to listen to this podcast. And I know, you know, what you're doing is wrong. Stop it. Like, stop it. You don't need to sell that high. All all right, we as an industry can stop selling as high as we do. And it's not a focus on the commissions per watt. It's not to the fact that commissions are significantly higher in the margin that we make. We're trying to make 15 to 24 cents a watt. But I'm not worried about what the commissions per watt is. I'm worried about what the customer's cost savings are. And we can do a better job. And we have a maniacal focus on being efficient, but also driving down our costs so we can accelerate the rate of residential adoption in the United States. Like, that is our mission. We are going to continue to do that, but we need to do it as an industry, all right? And we need to weed out the bad actors. And, how Nevada is doing it, I'm not saying it's the right way to do it, but they're trying to make us more accountable. And we as an industry need to hold ourselves more accountable. The finance companies need to put caps on how high you can sell on a per state basis. We do that. We are a residential installer, and we cap what we can sell to our customers on a per state basis. We're the only residential installer that I know have ever done anything like that.
Yeah.
And I'm sick and tired when I hear a leader come in and they want to come to Freedom and they start bragging about the value that they create and how high they sell. And they sell 30 to 40 cents higher than everyone else. First of all, they're usually a victim of a poor operation. Right. They usually have a very high red line that forces them to sell high. And They're taught to sell on value as opposed to like there is value. There's tremendous value in the cost savings. You don't need to charge that much. And it's incredibly frustrating when I hear that messaging out in the marketplace. So, when you sell one product and this is the only industry we're going to go, we're going to sell the same product. This person is going to sell 10 units at this price. This person is going to try to sell the same 10 units at 30% more. And that guy is celebrated. It's the same product.
Right.
That guy is literally like, it's not fraud, but it's just immoral.
Yeah.
Stop doing that. And if you're pitching to everyone that you have to create value and you need to sell higher, you're in the wrong system. Get out.
Well said. Well said. And we've put in a lot of different levers to address this, right? Not only the PPW caps. Another thing, and you kind of touched on this earlier, of projects that aren't getting to PTO fast enough. In our industry, back when interest rates were low, it wasn't a big deal, I think, for the finance companies to fund the entire project at install. And sales reps, I was a sales rep. I sold for a long time, and it was like, well, I did my job. The job has gotten installed. I should get all my money, and I'm done. But the reality is the customer hasn't actually gone solar until the system gets turned on. And so one of the other things that Freedom did is you guys put in a PTO payment. And that what's the reason behind that? Because I don't think anybody else in the industry is doing that, at least yet. And if they aren't, I think they should. But why does that exist?
Yeah, so the key word that we always use is there's this division between sales partners and installers. We want there to be greater alignment. And ultimately, we need to not only be aligned with our sales partner, but we need to be aligned with our customers. Truly, the way to do that is not getting it to install. All right. And this is a victim of what we've all created. Like finance companies, a lot of people have had a role in this. All right. The project is completed when the customer gets PTO'd. The customer doesn't celebrate the install. They like it, but they celebrate the PTO. Right now, I've been installed. I'm in California. I'm waiting for my PTO. It's frustrating. There's nothing I can do about it, but I'm not going to celebrate it until I get PTO. Yeah. And there has to be the alignment. And so therefore, why is all the financial compensation paid at install? Some of it, a small percentage of it, should be at PTO. And we want people driving. We want our sales rep keeping us accountable. Why haven't we gotten PTO on this project? That's a good question to be asking. But the problem is it doesn't get asked because they're paid at install.
Yep.
All right. And if we're not aligned with our customers, it's not going to work long term. And that's what we need to change as an industry.
Yeah, it almost seems like if you can put some of the money on PTO, then we all are aligned with the customer's best interest, which is they don't start saving money until the system's turned on. So thought that was a good move.
So one of the other things I want to talk about is just on clawbacks. All right. One of the incredible things, because we have exclusive agreements with our independent dealers, like they were there to help us with the clawbacks. And in some scenarios, they had commissions clawed back. But a lot of other companies, this is such a transitory business that people go from one company to the other. And if they feel that they have clawbacks coming, what do? They move projects somewhere else.
Yep.
So a lot of companies didn't do clawbacks because they couldn't get the clawbacks. And right. That's one of the reasons they got into trouble. So it was incredible to lock arms with our sales partners and our sales reps. And yes, was that a message that we wanted to deliver about clawbacks? No, but they work with us to fix a lot of those projects. And still to this day, like we've literally solved 98% of the clawbacks, which created a better customer experience. And having them locking arms and being there with us as opposed to being ghosts, which is what happened to so many other companies, which is the flaw in the model. And I would just say this, not just at Freedom, if you're working with another chuck at a truck, whoever you're working with, work with them exclusively. Don't give projects to three different installers. It doesn't work. It's incredibly dysfunctional. Installers have this fixed cost and they cannot have 10 projects one month and then 5 projects the next month.
Yeah.
That is disruptive to them. And if you want to have a stable installer, don't do that to them. And if you move around, and as soon as people heard about clawbacks and they started moving somewhere else, there was no money to be clawed back. And it created this just cascading negative effect on installers. And, you know, I appreciate all of our dealers working with us because they were amazing. And, you know, we handled it together and they were awesome.
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, massive amounts of credit to all of our exclusive dealers at the time, even if they're not with us anymore. The way we navigated through that experience at the beginning of 2023, all those challenges with clawbacks, and the way we all kind of band together and went and tried to get those customers out to PTO or resolve those issues that were blocking PTO. Very, very proud and grateful for the way everybody handled that difficult situation. And that is 2023, right? It's like chaos. When you have alignment, when you're on the same page and you guys are all, and we're all kind of invested in the success for the customer, we can figure this stuff out. And I think Freedom is living proof of that, that all these crazy dynamics and all these challenges, most of which is out of our control. Like we haven't even talked about wars overseas and all the other crazy things that are completely out of our control, but could have a major impact on our business. Seems like we can kind of navigate through almost anything given what we've been through, especially in 2023.
Yeah, I'm very excited to have 23 in the rearview mirror, but I've never been this optimistic. I have never seen the amount of people. Like the other day I sat in front of maybe 100 people in different groups. I don't know if I knew one of their names. It's just incredible. Like people are coming to Freedom and that they have so much faith in us. And, you know, we're just having to seize the opportunity. Like I've been on the road 8 out of the last 10 weeks. I don't think I've done that in the 9 years. And I'm thankful for the opportunity.
Yeah. And I know you can't predict the future, although sometimes it feels like you can. What do you hope 2024, if there's a theme or a word that you could attribute to 2024, realistically, what are you hoping that word or that theme would be for the next year?
It's not a word. It's a percentage. Like I believe we're about 10% of the residential market today. I think we can be 20% next year. And I think as we get bigger, we will be responsible and we will continue to drive down costs. I want to be able to make markets like Arizona work when the export rate goes down by 35% and we have to sell at $1.80 a watt to the customer. That's the stuff that gets me excited because that is our future. And to do that, we have to have our baselines down well below $1.50 to be able to do that.
Yep.
And there is a pathway to do that, but it's only through scale and it's only with the software. Like our software, and like I'm going to give a shout out to like our software team that have built Lightspeed. Like I don't even want to say like the guys' names because there's just too many of them now. Like it's incredible. Like, and we could not do this. It doesn't matter how hard we work, what process we create without the technology. And I probably underestimated when we went out and tried to do this in 2018, like they are our secret sauce. And it's incredible. And like when you're here in HQ and you walk around and you see 400 monitors and you see Lightspeed up on every single one, the fact that you can see that if you're on that and anybody makes a comment or does something, it's time stamped. It's just, it's incredible. Like you almost have to see it to really believe it, especially with, you know, all the people that's out there in the market and the lack of transparency. Like people come in and they see it and they're like, how did I just hear about you guys now? How did I not know that this existed? And there's like your life in solar, it's pre-freedom and post-freedom. And if you're pre-freedom, it's just a matter of time. If you stay in this, you're going to be post-freedom. So, and I'm a firm believer in this, that people are either going to elevate or they're going to become extinct. And I don't see anyone elevating right now. And that's what's disconcerting. But from a business standpoint, like 24, it's about domination.
I was going to say, going from 10% to 20%, I do think you could sum that up in one word and it would be dominate.
I agree. Serve, elevate, and dominate.
There you go. All right. Well, great. Thank you so much. His name is Brett Bushy. I am Chad Towner. We are excited to kick off season 5. We've got a ton of great episodes coming in the next couple of weeks. Stay tuned for the next episode. Thank you, Brett.
Thank you very much, Chad.